So welcome, fellow timekeepers. We're back this month for another sort of a bumper-packed episode. Really enjoyed our chat with Watch Yourself George last month and how he grew his YouTube channel as a young person who's sort of getting into watches. If you haven't listened to that, then do make time to this month. Like I said, really, really, really enjoyed it last time. And for me, like one of the best parts of doing this podcast is the interviews. We've got a vast array of guests from across the community, and I'm really particularly drawn to artists. You know, we had Zhi Wang just before Christmas, and you know, basically, you know, she just showed some incredible pieces and drawings and illustrations that she's done, which is why I'm really delighted to welcome Bjorn Altman, again, a fantastic illustrator. I don't think anyone else is doing what he's doing right now. So hello, Bjorn.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Wonderful. Brilliant. Yeah, great to have you on the show. And welcome, Zach. We're due to break bread, aren't we, in a few days' time, sort of in the flesh. Yeah. So really looking forward to seeing you. But why don't you tell your listeners how you've been and what you've been up to in the last few weeks?
Yes. Yeah, definitely looking forward to breaking bread and welcome, Bjorn. So a lot's been happening. I've landed a new role, which is brilliant. So I'm spending a lot of my time settling in, based in the kind of central London area, which is amazing. So lots to do and lots to see in that area. Also, I was reached out by the social media team from Bell and Ross. I know some other kind of watch content pages were too. And I was gifted the BRX5 steel in steel. For those of you know, it's quite a bigger watch for the bigger wrist. So I was definitely out of my comfort zone initially, but had kind of grown to kind of love it. Out of the range, it was the one that I was kind of suited to the most, I'd say. Spent a lot of time with it, got to take it to different kind of day in the life sort of situations. So I took it running on a run track in Paddington Rec as part of London Select, which was fun, and also took it to a concert and also wore it to dinner. So yeah, definitely an amazing experience.
No, that sounds really good, Zach. And well done. You know, like I said, you're sort of growing your you know, Instagram channel, and it's great that, you know, a company like Bell and Ross are sort of picking you to sort of do a sort of in-depth review, sort of day in the life, week in the life of wearing their watches. So so well done. Obviously, you had New York Times, didn't you, just before Christmas? And yeah. Now obviously getting noticed by other watch brands. So very well done there. Shall we pivot to wrist check? I'll go first if you like. So I've got my Omega Seamaster 300. Hang on, let's just see there in the summer blue. And what's great is I finally got it back on the bracelet. I had it off for summer and then I just couldn't get the damn thing back on. They're so fiddly. It took an age, lots of swear words, lots of YouTube videos to try and fix, you know, affix the bracelet to the watch. I'm just not very good at it. You know, why do they make it so hard? But maybe that's my ask for 2025 in the watch industry. Just make fixing bracelets so much easier. And before I pivot to Zach, there's not a new watch alert, but a watch sale alert. So it's my first one. Big news. I sold my first watch, you know, and it was using Sam from the Watch Concierge. You know, she was a really, really great person to use. She gave me a lot of attention and care. You know, if you're looking to part ways with one of your watches, you know, perhaps the Grail watch you've been chasing for a long time, you can 100% trust Sam, and I fully recommend her for our listeners. So do give her a follow and check out her current stock, you know, if you're on the lookout too. That actually leaves another watch that I'm looking to sort of pass on with, and that's the JLC Uniplan that I've got from the 1950s. It's on Krona 24, it's on eBay at the moment. Might take more of a discerning buyer, you know, but it's available for those interested in sort of, you know, adding Jaeger to their collection at a very good sort of value price point compared to a Reverso, which is obviously just going up and up in price. So Zach, what have you got on your wrist before I pivot over to Bjorn?
First of all, great watch, that Omega Seamaster 300. I think I've definitely seen it live in the flesh. I think we went to get pizza one time and you had it on. So great watch to wear coming into spring and into summer, if summer ever gets here in the UK.
But it did for about 5 days.
Yeah, then left. But most of all, kind of sad to see the Cincho go. for you. I was also quite very fond of that watch, rather, as I'm a great fan of Cartier, especially vintage. So nailed it with that watch. And also nice job to Sam to finding it its rightful new home. And also the Uniplan, hopefully that finds a new deserving home too, with its kind of unique offering. As I had written this, I did have my 1980s vintage Hamilton on, but now I have something slightly different. I'm not sure if it can be seen quite well, which is my Cartel watch, which I put together in the store. And that was kind of like a birthday experience that my girlfriend had gifted me. So quite cool to be in the store in Cole Yards at Cartel. Cartel being a small brand from Scotland, I think not known to many, but they definitely have a great offering there. So, how about you, Bjorn?
So I have the Omega Dynamic on today. So that's
very nice.
Very so early version, no date, no complications, 1968, I think. And I got it quite cheaply once on eBay. It was in an awful strap. I mean, the version, obviously it only fits a certain type of strap goes on it. But there are better and, not so good versions of that. And then I managed to track down a nice strap and matching buckle also, which is for this generation. You need to do quite a bit of searching to find it. That's actually the watch that started everything.
Oh, wonderful. Not it's really good. We like those stories.
Not the watch collecting, but what we're going to talk about later, my work. Oh,
brilliant. That sounds really good.
And also
fantastic.
The Omega, I really like how on the modern ones, you know, the dive watch, how they've done that with the shade of blue, how it goes darker, the deeper the watch can dive.
No, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I went into Omega a couple of days ago, actually, and just tried on some of the rest of that summer blue range. And I think it was the Aquaterra as well. It sort of goes black, and then in the light sort of shimmies and shimmers, and it's this wonderful blue color. So, yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, I looked at the Ploprof, but that's obviously a beast.
Oh, wow.
Even the new one, and it's just 15 grand, so, you know.
No.
Unfortunately. Exactly. I thought it was titanium, actually, but it's still.
Okay.
It's still.
Oh. Brilliant. Cool. So, we've done wrist check. Should we do watches we're lusting after? So for me, taste change, right? I don't think I'd be saying that. I thought my tastes were quite fixed. But I'm finding, you know, as we go further down this rabbit hole of the podcast, there are certain things you sort of come across that you just weren't looking at even 12 months ago when we started this podcast. We've spoken about sort of my love of classic vintage Calatravas, but recently I've been really drawn to, and I'm not going to say the Cubitus or the Nautilus because I do not like those ones and I don't think that's ever going to change. But I've seen a few on sale and on Instagram with sort of the sunray dial of the Ellipse. And it's paired with that wonderful gold or silver case, no date window, because I'm not a big fan of date windows, as lots of listeners know. There's a black dull version as well, and that's in a sunray dial too. And they've obviously got the matching oval strap buckle, which I think is a rather neat touch. So for me, that's the watch I'm lusting after this month, definitely the Ellipse. Zach, what about you before we go to Bjorn?
Yeah, definitely. And great choice with the Ellipse. I think it's a watch that has probably come up in conversation before. It's a perfect example of a watch being done so well, from the dial to kind of like the smooth polished case and also the kind of crocodile, as you were, strap, gloss strap. So definitely up my street. So great selection. For me, I've been obsessing over Cartier Dumont's, which I sent over into the group. Yeah, I know that Tim's a big fan, and maybe Bjorn, I know you're a fan of Cartier too. Mm-hmm. I've been looking at, you know, the vintage, I'd say I'd put first, and I think Tim kind of mirrors that too. He also had the same sentiment. But then I've also been looking at some of the modern versions, mainly the silver steel variant with the blue strap. In the smaller sizes, that's for sure. So that's kind of what I've been kind of looking over. And yeah, kind of flirting with the idea of maybe replacing the Rolex with something like that, maybe at some point, but who knows, who knows? How about you, Bjorn?
Yeah, it's really difficult. So for example, Reverso Classique in gold could be nice, or one of the ones with complications, Reverso. And Breguet Classique is also obviously very nice and elegant, but when it comes to Cartier, I have to agree, the Santos Dumont, potentially the Platinum with Burgundy numerals and Burgundy hands. That was, I think, a collection that they made. I don't know if it was during CPCP, but it looks like the gold version, but it's just, it was a limited edition, I think, where they made a Baignoire Allongé that looked like that. And then Tank Louis, and there were some other models, but I can't remember now. Yeah, and they are quite sought after, so obviously unaffordable, but that would be nice. Otherwise, you know, the CPCP, Santos Dumont, because it's quite, you know, understated and subtle. Although it's gold, it's not blingy, because I think it's brushed like with the Vacheron Constantin 222. So yeah, I mean, it's really difficult to define one where you say, yeah, that's the only one, which would bring us to the discussion about one watch collections and so on.
No, definitely. I do love, you know, the Santos Dumont, but again, the vintage ones, I'm not a big fan of the new. We talked about Cartier a few episodes back, but the more vintage ones, I just think are incredible. I don't like what they've done with the numerals or sort of the case on the newer ones, but the newer ones are bizarrely cheaper than the vintage ones.
Yeah. But then they're also not mechanical, apart from the black lacquer Santos Dumont, which is, that's actually quite nice or quite interesting. Because it because it's black and has this lacquer infills, it looks smaller than the standard version, which, because it's all silver, it looks quite big.
Yeah.
And so I find it actually a bit too big.
I was going to quickly mention that I'd agree, like, as you look at the old and the newer version, yeah, it's interesting, like Bjorn mentioned, that the new one is quartz. I know people have preferences. I don't really mind if it's quartz or mechanical. It just depends on how I feel about the watch overall. But then I do, looking at the both models, I do kind of see that the dial of the vintage has a bit more depth for me. So I can see how that's that kind of supersedes the new. But yeah.
Yeah. And what I like about some of those on the Santos Dumont thin is they've got the, obviously, the word Cartier on sort of the X of the 10, whereas obviously, you know, more, you know, in most Cartiers is obviously on a different number, but having it on the 10, I think, is a nice touch on the Roman numerals.
They do that on the small dials. So if you look at a Tank Solo small, for example, or the current Tank Must, on the small, it's in the 10, because otherwise it would be too short. Normally it's in the 7. But that's a much shorter space or a much smaller space. So if you did that on a small dial, it would be illegible.
I just like the neat touches like that. So we, you know, we do love Cartier here. We're all in agreement with the love of Cartier, which is great.
Yeah.
So should we pivot to watch shots of the month? So, as you know, I never just pick one. I've got three of them. So I'll rattle through them. And then also we've got a wonderful beer mat that I've got over here. So the winner gets a wonderful beer mat of our Timekeepers logo there. Got to have a bit of merch. So the first one, and we'll probably use our phones to go through it as well, and we'll flash it up on screen for people, and it's by someone called A Slap on the Wrist, and they've got a Jaeger LeCoultre Reverso, and it's in reverse. You're looking at the back of it, so they flipped it over, showing the gold case back, and also you've got the wonderful design lines and all of its sort of aesthetic beauty. Strapless too, so you just have the actual case itself. They've done a bit of cheeky editing to show the front side of the watch sort of popping out to the left and to the right hand side, almost giving like a sneak peek. He's got this wonderful black dial, with this great finishing. I tried to Google the name of, but I couldn't find. But yeah, it matches so well with the gold case itself, and absolutely love it. And then my second one is a Time by Raf, and it's sort of a killer little watch for me. So I've never come across it before, and I think it's called a Gygax jump hour, and I do love a good jump hour. And it's really hard to explain on a podcast. So again, if you're listening to this, you have to jump over to our YouTube channel. For me, it's like this sort of vintage 1960s, and because of my love of DC comics, it's almost like a 1960s sort of Batmobile. You've got the silver lines around it. You've got sort of the red numerals and sort of a jet black case. Even the jump hour layout looks akin to a bat, if you ask me. Maybe it's like a Rorschach's painting and I'm looking too much into it, but I think it's so cool and not seen anything like it before. And then my final one is from the wristwatch doctor, and he's obviously got his Cartier tank, and he captures it in black and white. And I think it's a marvelous series, and they're all fantastic. So do go over to look at his sort of reel he's got there. And like I said, my favorite one was on the reel in particular, and it was almost like a translucent, like glass of water, and it sort of had condensation as the foreground, acting almost like a tank, with the tank being dunked halfway down. In my mind, it's almost like one of those coral reef shots or videos that you see on Instagram with like the fish below the waterline. It's really clever, and I think it deserves a proper shout out. So, Zach, what do you think of those, and what are yours before we go to Bjorn? And he can obviously give a comment about those different shots as well.
Sure, definitely. Another, I always say, Tim picked three. Oh, he's picked more than me, and I'm going to struggle to pick three. But these are really some great examples here. You managed to find the most creative, like, shot, macro lens style shots, if that's even what you call it. I'm not really that well skilled when it comes to cameras, so I try to just find things that kind of suit my style more so. But yeah, I love these shots. I'll probably say out of the three, I quite love that jump hour, really Art Deco. Never seen that watch, Gygax jump hour, before, but they really fascinate me, as I've never seen one like that in person. And that Cartier with that kind of condensated glass is also another great choice. For myself, I've only have two, so unfortunately not as popular as Tim with that one. So I've got one from Menega, M_ between each letter, on Instagram. And it's a Flying Saucer vintage Rolex. I think the watch looks really enchanting. I believe this one was part of Sotheby's watches auction. I just love how it's paired and sat over the wrist, like Agnelli, as those who know, having a watch over the wrist. He popularized that famously. I love it how this watch is over a jumper. It's kind of shining in the sunlight, and it's paired with corduroys and kind of part of like a shot in kind of like a day in a life sort of stylistic way.
It looks futuristic almost, like the 1960s, 70s, what they thought the future would be like in 100 years time.
Space age.
Yeah, I kind of feel like you mentioned, Bjorn, they need to bring back like some interesting shapes. And I feel like you guys have just mentioned, they did a really good job at kind of using these experimental shapes that are truly iconic. I feel like we play it quite safe and conservative nowadays. And the second shot was from Kawil, I think, kawail.sr.vintage. And that shot was of a vintage AP, probably kind of a similar style as the Ellipse, but more square TV style case. It has a really alluring shot on the hands, or wrapped around the fingers, and it's the watch has a great alluring green dial, an almost braided gold finish and pattern around the case, as well as gold hands. It's a really simplistic watch with a bit more complex bracelet and case design, and shot really well to capture all of its beauty. How about you, Bjorn? What's your thoughts of the shots, and any shots that have come up in your mind?
I really like that jump hour watch, because it's like like the old Bakelite telephones, you know, you have mostly black and then you've got some red accents and, you know, mm-hmm. black, red and white just always works. I mean, it's mm-hmm. minimalist and Art Deco. Yeah. I mean, that's my favorite style anyway. That's why I also like the Reverso here. And I think that could be the dual face with the dark gray dial. That looks like the dual face. Because they also made that in gold. There was this whole series of versions of the Grand Taille with complications. I mean, the Patek Philippe, that's always a... That will remain a classic. I think I prefer that to the Breguet Classique. Because there we have a date window, yeah? And the date mm-hmm. window sits directly next to the three, and then you just... That doesn't really... Yeah, either it's there where the three is, or you just don't have one. And I think the dress watch doesn't need one.
No. It's, well, I think no watch needs them. True. I'm one of those. Jack, I was just going to say that the bracelet on this Audemars Piguet is incredible. I've never seen anything like it before. I don't know about you, Bjorn. It's the way it's like knitted together.
Yeah,
it's just so good, and the green dial. I had to zoom in and see whether it was actually green. It's so nice.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's a sort of matte. Maybe it's a matte blue. But yeah, I think they did show how the bracelets are made, how a jeweler actually makes them, and it's incredibly labor intensive. I found that actually with Cartier, most of the bracelets aren't necessarily original on the vintage models. So the people actually went to the jeweler and had them made. But there are some rare ones that have been made by Cartier. But obviously, if you want one later, they will, you know, you will have to pay accordingly because that's extremely time intensive. And no, then it's also in Norway. There are no machines involved, or it's someone actually sitting there and making it just for you. So that's what you then pay for, I guess.
No, exactly. So I think if we're going for a winner, I mean, Zach, Bjorn, what do you think about the time by Raff and the Gygax? I think that jump hour probably does it.
The jump hour, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree as well. I'd agree.
Brilliant. Mm. Cool. Well, we'll speak to Time by Raff and we'll give him one of our wonderful beer mats that he can enjoy to his heart's content. So then that's what we love handing out to people. Like I said, everyone likes free merch, right? Cool. So shall we pivot to the main interview section? I think that's what we've got now. So I'm just going to bring up the questions, which we've obviously shared beforehand. So, Zach, do you want to go first with the question? And then you do the odds and I'll do the even questions.
Sure, I can do. I'll start with the first one. So what art and illustrations work do you do and how have you got into it?
So my background is in branding, graphic design, and typography. And so typography and illustration were always a big part of what I do. And so my dad used to collect watches. And that got me interested from, you know, quite early on. So I had, when the wall came down in 1989, then there was obviously lots of Soviet-made watches flooding the market, and you were able to get them for really next to nothing, 40 Deutschmarks, I think it were. And flea markets, you know, there were Polyot chronographs and fairly affordable, really. So that's something I bought at the time. And then I once worked in a garden for a week, and I think that was the first watch I bought with my own money. That was a Benetton Boulevard with the Citizen Movement, which had an exhibition case back, and also you could see the balance wheel through the dial because there was a hole, and that I found that fascinating. So that was And then, how did I get into this? So I've always drawn by hand, and first with pencil and then with an ink pen on paper, and also watches, but very few. And later, then obviously I did a lot in Illustrator anyway. And after work, usually, you know, late in the evening, I experimented with stuff. And then I discovered the Omega Dynamic. And there was this article, there's this PDF online with someone where someone went into detail and explained the watch and the background. And I found it really fascinating that there were so many dial combinations of the first generation. I think there were 48 different combinations. And mostly these are now corroded or not in good condition anymore, have been retouched and so on. And then I thought, oh, it could be interesting to just redraw a collection of them to see them lined up, how they were when they were perfect. So the different metallic ones, and then also the interesting contrast that they chose, the orange on gray and stuff like that. And then obviously also redrew the type to go with that. And then just, you know, some, I think, dials of some Russian watches and some other dials. And then someone at work saw that. And he said, oh, you know, I actually wanted to give my friend something like that for the wall of Submariner Hulk. Can you draw that for me? And then, obviously, I had to include the case and the bezel and so on. So that's when, before it was just dials. But the dial on its own didn't make any sense. Because really, if you take the Submariner dial, that's not a Submariner. You need the rest as well. And so, yeah, he was happy. And then I thought, okay, I will now continue drawing entire watches. So the case as well and the bezel. And selected watches basically on what I liked or what was fairly complicated, sort of to give myself a challenge, like the Breitling Navitimer Cosmonaut Chronomatic, which has a 24-hour dial and I think four different sets of numerals on it and lots of text. And that was so complicated that I actually thought in the beginning, I don't know if I can do it. I'm not sure. And it took me a week, which is, well, because it's so complicated. I think it's almost, apart from the Zenith Chronomaster that I've also done, where I also did the back of it, because that was a commission. Most complicated to date, so normally they don't take me this long. But, yeah, I mean, this is basically how I got into it.
Yeah. And how many years ago was that? Was this, you know, is this something you picked up in the last couple of years, or have you done this for an even longer time?
Well, I think this, the very first ones that might have been, you know, something like 2018. Mm-hmm. But that was just here and there and other stuff in between. So I really started doing more when in 2020, basically lost my job, then had to obviously create my website as quickly as possible, generate content also to post on Instagram on a regular basis. So first I posted some typography and branding and some logos and whatever, and then went into watches and then started posting watches from, I think, summer 2020 onwards. And first they were just, you know, the dial or the case with the dial and all sorts of watches. And then I noticed that there were collectors of vintage Heuer watches from the feedback mm-hmm. I got. And then there was this fan group at the time, I think, I'm not sure if they're still around, Caliber 11. That's particularly Heuer collectors. And then they contacted me and said, hey, you know, can we do this Autavia Siffert re-edition for us? Can you draw that? And that was obviously useful for my, to get more followers and so on. And then Jeff Stein contacted me, and he's sort of the, how should I put it? He's the expert on vintage Heuer watches. He has an entire website dedicated to that. And he was writing an article on the Dark Lord, the Monaco, the Black mm-hmm. Monaco for Hodinkee. And he said, yeah, it would be, you know, he needed basically an illustration of how it was, how it would have looked when it was new, and now, and also an aged one. And one of them was used for the article, which was also quite nice.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you. And that was sort of late 2021, or towards the end of 2021. And then there was a collector, Hoya Collector, who contacted me, who wanted 10 illustrations of his watches. And he also was very meticulous. I mean, he would then, obviously, there were rounds of amends, and he would look at every single detail and also at the letters. And so finally, someone who cares about typography, I thought, you know, that's great. I mean, especially in the old days, you know, they would draw them by hand anyway, the dials. And people would know more about type before digital type obviously was made available in the 80s. And then it, in some instances, it just went downhill from there, unfortunately. I mean, not across the board, but yeah. And then this was then in 2022. Yeah, in the beginning of 2022, I met this very complex illustration of the Zenith Chronomaster for someone who had just bought that watch and wanted it on the wall. And that was crazy complex, especially because it has an exhibition case back. So that meant lots of wheels and, you know, the rotor. And basically I had to draw everything underneath the rotor and then put the rotor on. So I needed to not find enough images to actually know what's going on here and how does it work.
Oh, wow. That's, yeah. I had a particular question, and it was like, how does it all work? You know, is it all done on a computer illustrated, or do you do stuff by hand first and then sort of transpose it on? I mean, it's just fascinating just to understand the process of how you get those amazing illustrations that you put on your Instagram.
Yeah, thank you. Well, so it's all Adobe Illustrator, and starts with a circle usually. and I've posted actually sort of behind the scenes where you switch between the wireframe and the illustration, because what I notice is that very often I get contacted. How much? Yeah, I mean, like, collectors are really annoyed when they get asked on Instagram how much.
Yeah,
and they don't even ask more than just how much, and then you know, not even a full sentence, and then. So people are obviously mistake my illustrations for real watches sometimes. and interesting when they don't exist, like with, but it would be nice if they did, I guess. For example, exactly. We were talking about the Santos in this instance, the Santos Carré from 78 in solid gold, which is very nice, obviously. And especially with burgundy dial. And I did actually make an illustration of that not in 2022, but for a watch auction house for their covers. So one of them was this Santos Carré with a Kanjar dial. So it was originally made for royalty, and then they had that put on the dial by Cartier.
What auction house was it? Was it
Watches of Knightsbridge?
Yeah, yes. I literally have one of their ones. So you did this one.
So basically, I can't see that now, but it's, yeah, so that's the Cartier octagon. But yeah, so the starting from the Patek Philippe Nautilus, vintage Patek Philippe Nautilus onwards, I've done the cover illustrations for them.
Oh, wow.
So there were quite a few interesting ones. Also, a Hoya, a vintage Hoya in solid gold. I forget the reference now, but with black subdials, a very nice one, with a mesh bracelet. Now, that took some time.
Nice.
Because that's nice. Not done with any automation. That's not auto trace or anything. It's all bits, little bits. By hand. So it just, the more detail, the longer it takes. Like with a render, if we take a, you know, a video game or something, the more detail, the longer it will take. That's why things tend to look hyper real, because they lack the detail they need, the imperfections of nature, because nothing is really that perfect. And that's why you can always usually tell if something is real or not.
Love a good mesh dial, mesh bracelet.
There's also a really nice mesh bracelet, speaking of those, on the Breitling Super Ocean Heritage 57, which is an unusually, for Breitling, unusually thin watch, just 9.9 millimeters thick, and a really well integrated mesh bracelet, very thick bracelet, and really nice re-edition. That was actually done when Sylvain Bannerand was at Breitling.
Fascinating.
So as close as you can get to the Mirage, I guess. I mean, at least, you know, one watch that he had his hand in. That's sort of affordable for the, normal.
That's a very good point.
I mean, it's very elegant. It's just,
I think I have the next question that kind of leads on from this. So how long does it take to design a single piece?
Yeah, it's, so depending on the complexity. So I used to say a chronograph takes 2.5 days, but that would mean a time-only watch takes less time. But then the crash is an equally complicated watch. So the complexity is really high. That's why it also took 2.5 days to make. And this is interesting, actually, in 2022, when we had this crazy summer in London and we're hitting actually 40 degrees, I had to escape to a coffee shop with aircon. And that's when I made the first really detailed Cartier crash illustration. And in that instance, it was for an article in Wrist Check, the Hong Kong-based magazine. And they said, actually, can we have one of your crash illustrations? And we were writing an article about that watch. And then I said, you know, where's it going? And they said, oh, it's going to be in the header. And then I thought, okay, then the existing ones are not good enough. I have to do it from scratch, because it's going to be fairly big. It's not Instagram size. So, and it was good then that there was this sort of need for it to be created, because otherwise I might have thought, well, I've sort of done it. Now, do I want to do it again, just like that? So it's good if there's a bit of pressure. And yeah, so I basically did that on the hottest days in that year. So it will always be tied to that. And it was a good use of my time anyway. And I think it was 2.5 days. Yeah, because there also the strap, sort of a lizard strap. I remember I asked Roni Madvani about what he thought, you know, and made the decision to put it on this lizard strap. And that was also all done by hand, you know, tiny bits to draw there. But the end result I was quite happy with, and then that led to other things.
Was that one afternoon in a coffee shop is what you're saying? Or was it many trips to the coffee shop when it was 40 degrees?
No, I mean, basically it was 2.5 days as well. Yeah.
Oh, 2.5 days. Okay.
Chronograph. So, but for example, something as complicated as the watches I did for Ollich and Weiss, those chronographs, because they are crazy complex. The dials, so much text and so many different numerals on them. So first they have to be all drawn in a line from, you know, 0 to 9. And then maybe times 4, like with the Breitling. And then also the letters for the logo or for whatever descriptions they've got on the dial. And then I have to make it all, you know, go in the right place. And then obviously the effects and so on. So with Ollich and Weiss, for example, we also talked about the color of the loom, because they wanted this for the campaign Classics Immortalized. So they were meant to look new. So then they did research on finding out how the loom might have looked when these watches were new. And we tried then to match this sort of shade of green, beige or whatever, because it wasn't always the same. And it's very interesting, the loom question, you know, how it ages, and is it actually really ever as roasted as Omega does it sometimes? Although I have to say, the latest Speedmaster, the first Omega in space with a blue dial, that's very nice. It's not overdone.
No, it is. It's lovely.
Yeah. So, you know, the Zenith Chronomaster and the Breitling Navitimer Cosmonaut Chronomatic, those took, I think, sort of a week to do.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Ehrlich and Weiss, I think maybe 3 days for each chronograph.
No, excellent. Like I said, we asked she like how long it took her as well, you know, as sort of a watch artist. It's always incredible just to see, because, you know, we just see the image on Instagram and think, oh, that's absolutely incredible. But some people then just move on and it's like, but this is, you know, people sort of, dare I say, blood, sweat and tears. And I'm always fascinated to see how long it took them, and whether it's a little sketch or whether it's, like you said, a great big illustration for a big, article or something for that kind of stuff. So fascinating. I think I've got the next question, and it's, what are some of the challenges of doing your illustrations? I know you've touched upon them already, but perhaps maybe an example of your most difficult challenge and how you overcame it, really.
Well, that would have been at the end of 2022 when basically Tag Heuer contacted me on Instagram, and they had they must have looked for ways to depict all these references that were meant to go in the book on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the Carrera, which came out in 2023. So they found me, basically, and then they said, oh, we need illustrations of a few watches for our book. And then I thought, oh, you know, maybe for dividers in the book, you know, big maybe or something. Sounds good. Yeah, how many is a few? And then he said, well, 1,000. And
wow.
I thought, okay, that's interesting. Because timing, you know, then the next question was, when is the deadline? Because it's just, there's only so much you can do. You can only speed it up so much. Now, I did say 2.5 days for a chronograph, but the biggest challenge ever was this project. It was then narrowed down to, or cut down to, 600 watches. And some of them are sort of, they share certain elements. They will just recur and they will be quite similar, but they will still be slightly different. So you need to look at all the details and find then, I thought this watch was the same, just different colorway. No, actually, it's not. They changed something. Maybe one subdial is different. It's a different font. Nobody knows why, but it is different. Or it doesn't have a date window. Or the date window has a different surround. And then also, because I had to work with photos that were sometimes pulled off, let's say, Watchfinder France, because that was the only photo in existence on the entire internet. Maybe, you know, the reflections were difficult and I wasn't sure, are the hands silver, are they black, or are they gold? And so then, you know, some more Googling maybe, or asking the question, obviously, to Jeff, who's the expert. And I think, so we basically started, there was a list, a big list, spreadsheet, and started sort of just before Christmas 2022, and then worked my way through, directly through New Year's, all of January, all of February, stopped for 4 days, beginning of March, the rest of March, and then in April, and I'm talking about every single day, no weekends, every single day.
Wow.
And that was really, I was up against. So sometimes if there were watches that were sort of fairly close, or there were almost duplicates, or, you know, it was like 8 watches a day. Yeah. That sort of speed.
That's incredible.
Otherwise, there would have been no way to meet the deadline. It's just, it's sort of this, there's a trade-off, obviously, because you have to decide, okay, we have to, can't go into every single detail because then we're never going to make it. So we have to, certain watches, like the one that's sort of, it looks like diamonds have exploded onto the watch. I think it costs $500,000, that one.
Wow.
That's obviously where I spend a lot of time. So on that one, I probably spent 2 days. And on others, not that much time because they were fairly similar and not that important, maybe, or not as important. But other watches, there were no shortcuts because either you you showed what was there, but it wasn't that watch. So the same thing happens when you can't just change the typeface for something fairly close, but not really the same, because suddenly the whole character of the watch has changed.
Yeah, definitely. Did they pay you in Tag Heuers as well? Or did you just take cold hard cash?
that's a good question.
No watches. No. Well, you know, I could have bought some watches, I guess, but yeah. Well, I did buy some watches, but yeah, so it was, I don't know, how many months did I spend on it? I think we were sort of done by June, but there was an interruption. There was a break when obviously things were checked and so on, because someone needed to go through all of them. And especially the vintage ones were also very challenging because there were so many unusual details. Some old Seafarers, for example. I think you mentioned that.
I love a good Seafarer.
Yeah. The details on there, well, you don't find them on any other watch. So, you know, these, the subdials and the gradients on them, and it's just so unusual. Yeah. So everything had to be done from scratch for those. There was no duplication. And then there are sort of other references that are so, where you can see how they developed this reference, but they're still fairly different. And then sometimes you have different logos on them. So the logo had to be created from scratch as well. So it's like redrawing the logo. That's half a day already. Yeah, and I think...
So you must have patience for Saint then to do that, because I don't have patience. So you must have a massive tolerance threshold.
Certainly was quite challenging in terms of finding the energy. You know, as after 3 months or almost straight, working straight, you know, obviously you wear out. And you have to stop, because otherwise you can't continue. But it's obviously, it was an incredibly exciting project. And when I first saw the global editorial director wrote to me on Instagram, and initially I wasn't sure, who is this? Is this real? And it was great, obviously. And I did get the book. Of course. So it was actually in a box that looked like a vintage Heuer box, with a racing stripe around it. And then also this desk clock version of a current glass box Carrera. So it's
wonderful.
Looks like the blue one, but obviously, you know, quite big and quartz.
That sounds incredible. Definitely your magnum opus then, thus far.
Thus far, yeah. Well, it's sometimes actually, you know, some projects that I would want to talk about and can't talk about. That's
You said
at some point maybe.
Look forward to it.
But one of them that it will be possible later at some point. Definitely. And others, not directly. But I think it also happened that year, and I'm allowed to mention that I've worked for him, Emmanuel Geit. So he wrote to me, also on Instagram. And he really liked my illustration of the Audemars Piguet Disco Volante. I just love that watch because it's so thin and so elegant.
Absolutely.
And it's just, yeah. And also the motivation was because they were not waterproof, you know, obviously stuff got in, a bit of corrosion, but you see it's this perfect design. And then there's a bit of corrosion somewhere. And you think, I have to redraw this now to see how it looked when it was new, and then it's perfect again. And so we see how the designer intended it to be. And that's sort of led to the Ehrlich & Weiss project, because they said, we actually want to recreate these watches that are completely corroded and or sometimes don't even exist anymore. And here are photos of some parts. Now, can you put them together to make the watch?
No, wonderful. That's a great story. I think, Zach, you've got the next question. I think we know what the answer is going to be, but Zach, why don't you take us away and ask?
Definitely. So what's your favorite watch brand to illustrate?
Oh, that's Cartier. I mean, it's just and Waikato, so it's timeless elegance, I think, and refinement and interesting shapes. And it's also interesting when you see, I mean, that's the next thing. After I discovered there are lots of vintage Hoyer collectors, I discovered there are lots of vintage Cartier collectors. And then I started to draw. I think the first one ever I was from a magazine. It was the Tank Louis. At the time, I think Rose Gold, Tank Louis. And then it sort of developed from there. So first just the watch without the strap, and then later also the straps or the bracelets. And then also variations. So sometimes it's just interesting to see what if they had made this baignoire longée, but with a reverse dial. I think they have, but I always like white on black Roman numerals. Mm-hmm. That's just really very elegant. And there are not that many of them. I think there's a Tank Française with a reverse dial, but it's a lady's size, and I haven't seen many of those. Sometimes they make it for a particular country. And then what I really like is when, sometimes collectors post a sketch that they have. Maybe it's from a book or something, from a Cartier book. And then it's sometimes unclear if the watch has been made or not. So, for example, at one point, someone wrote to me and said, I've just got this screenshot. I wish I'd taken the screenshot of the entire watch. And now it's so pixelated. And it was a sort of asymmetric, but with an enamel, not dial, but it was sort of enamel with Roman numerals. And then in the middle, you have got a cutout actually with the hands. And apparently that might be a one-off. It's ultra rare in any case. And then I recreated that digitally. And then also three variations of it. What if it had been platinum with red enamel? And then that way you can see things that never existed or maybe existed and can be recreated from a sketch, or the sketch can be brought to life. Because there was someone, I think Cartier Signature he's called, and he posted a sketch. Mm-hmm. So it was just a drawing really on paper. And maybe someone has that watch, but they haven't posted it, so we don't know. But then I can sort of bring it to life with my work, because then it looks more real that way.
Absolutely. I think that brings us on to the next question, which is me. And I think it's, what watch sort of is a model that you wish the company brought back, and why, if you've got like a particular example?
Yeah, that was I mentioned it already, the Audemars Piguet Disco Volante.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was one in the 90s. Apparently I've seen that recently. It looks like ripples in the water when you throw a stone. That's what it reminds me of. But the old ones, I mean, the 50s design is just, it's just amazing. I mean, there's nothing that comes close to it. And the movement, I think, was the thinnest at the time, with something like under 2 millimeters. Just incredible.
Really incredible.
And also not designed by Gerard Genta, but by Gebhard Duwe. And I found that out when I discovered the AP Archives website, where they really go into all the detail and they show drawings. And also, that's where normally, because I hadn't heard the name before. And I think he was working freelance for AP. And then he just created quite a few versions of it. And I've seen, I think I saw it first on Ronnie Madvani's Instagram. And then he has a few, and then I started to recreate some, and also with dials that don't exist, just, to see how it looks.
No, absolutely. We all love Cartier here, but I think the back catalogue is incredible. I talked about obviously parting ways with the Centure, but if they sort of dipped their toe back and then brought all these out again, as a modern, more functioning, sort of workable watch, I think they'd make an absolute killing. They just need to open that book up and just re-release loads of things from their back catalogue. But I'm sure you agree.
Yeah.
Or create new ones as well.
there is so much. I mean, I actually really sort of surprised, but it's obviously a great thing that they've done that, that the current tank Must Large is the same size and shape as the tank Louis. So in a way, you know, obviously it's not cheap, but way more affordable than the tank Louis. And maybe less noticeable because the tank Louis would be in gold. And if you want it mechanical, you need to take the rose gold version. Although the classic is really the yellow gold, isn't it? But it would be as if they had made the Cintré in the Tank Cintré in steel, or the Asymmetrique, because you know, before there was a clear distinction. The Tank Solo Large was much bigger and also flatter and a different cabochon and so on compared to the Tank Louis. So there was this clear division, like with the Tank Française and the Tank Normal. And maybe, yeah, the Tank American and the Cintré.
No, exactly. You mentioned cabochons as well. And, you know, listeners will know that I have a big infatuation with them. And I know, obviously, most of them are blue and they've got a few red, but I think they should make green ones, purple ones. I don't know about you, whether you think they should be different colours. But again, I think they'd make a killing if you could select and customise, you know, which one, which colour you wanted. And I know they do that for very elite, wealthy people. But for the masses like myself, it'd be great if you could pick a cabochon colour for your
Cartier. So I've got a little bit of insight there in this Ooh. Special order program, because then collectors contacted me and asked me, you know, I'm actually just working on this, and can you help me visualize something? And so all these things remain confidential. So collectors, most of them don't tend to post actually, because then someone else could say, well, oh, I really like this. Yeah, I want that as well. And then they would make it, just not exactly the same, but almost. And then obviously, like with anything exclusive, you want it to be as exclusive as possible. Now, as we know, normally with the precious metal, you would have a sapphire cabochon. With platinum, it would always be the ruby cabochon, the red one. And those are basically the rules. And on non-precious metal, you have a blue spinel or a black spinel. Well, there was an exception with the black dial Tank Must limited edition that actually had a black spinel cabochon. And the standard one has a blue one. But then on Instagram, you can see some, you know, collectors post their crash and green dial and green cabochon. So it's possible to color match. And I think that might have been, it's probably not an emerald because they're quite brittle. So it might have been jade. And I think, what else have I seen there? I mean, it's, yeah, some people do post them. And then I think you can match black spinel and black dial on a platinum watch, and it used to be different. So you could have a sapphire on a platinum, I think, but that's before, that was during the CP period, I think. So way back before 2008. But otherwise, I think I might have seen, I don't know, amethyst is probably not that likely because it's not precious enough. But I think might have seen that. But basically, you have a certain, you have guidelines on what you can do, and also depending on, you know, I guess collectors of a certain standing.
No, definitely. I think my point is I want it more democratized, so the likes of people like me could not necessarily precious gems, but you just have the plastic and it's blue and you can just have it green and you can just select it. I know, obviously, you know, there are different strata in society and they can afford these different things, but like I said, for the masses, it'd be great if you could pick the color combinations.
Yeah, I think it's also there are, you might have noticed that on Instagram, there are lots of those special, especially crash models.
Absolutely.
And lots of Cintrés, and actually fewer of the Tank Louis, I found. There were some special editions for, I don't know, it was Singapore, a Tank Louis with Arabic numerals and a purple dial, deep purple, and a platinum case. Incredible. Incredible.
Wonderful.
Because it's also with the watch is small, but with that dense metal, it has a really nice heft. And yeah, I had one in my hand once, you know, just to see from up close. And yes, well, it's quite different. I mean, you can tell the difference with the weight.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Zach, I think you've got the next question before we sort of dig into a few of your designs. Yeah, I do.
I was going to say that's actually quite interesting to know about the cabochon because I didn't actually know that. So yeah, thanks for sharing. But yeah, so do you design new concepts which you hope a company picks up?
Well, I think it's, I noticed that collectors like seeing variations. And obviously, you know, this could be sometimes if I post something that's a variation that doesn't exist, someone could then use that to have their special order created in theory. But what I find almost more interesting is to go into the vintage department and then recreate watches that were maybe not in good condition anymore to see how they might have looked when they were new. For example, there's this sort of rhomboid-shaped Cartier, like a lozenge. It looks like a lozenge. Yeah, I think that's the word. That was a drawing originally. And then there's this crazy asymmetrique with four lugs. So the current one has three, and that one has four. And there's only one black and white image anywhere on the web or on Instagram. That's all that exists. Nobody knows where the watch is or if it still exists, or probably in someone's collection, but apparently it has never been seen. So then I recreated that in color to see what that looks like. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, you know, it would be nice if in a way Heuer, obviously Tag Heuer picked up on what I do, and then Cartier Collectors and Olech & Weiss. So far, and then also, you know, Emmanuel Guide, obviously, I mean, he designed the Audemars Piguet Royal Oak Offshore in 93, and then quite a few other watches, and obviously worked for other brands than Audemars Piguet as well. Lately for Denison. Yeah, have you seen that? The 1960s inspired watch with the stone dials.
Oh, I have. Yeah, we do love a good stone dial here, don't we? Yeah, I like the Baltics that they've done with the recent stone dial, and I've got the lapis blue one, but the Denison ones look incredible. Is it the Tiger's Eye one is one of my favorites?
Yeah, Tiger's Eye. I've seen them at Watch Pro in London last year, and I think, yeah, Aventurine is quite sparkly, so it would be for certain occasions only. I guess I quite like that, but otherwise, it's difficult to decide, really. I mean, malachite is not something you see a lot. So, I think it's great that it's sort of more accessible that way. You know, this design.
Definitely.
And fairly affordable. And now I've actually, there are some version of the Vacheron 222. So I created quite a few, And there are also two, the gold a version with the stone dial, with a lapis, and then also with a malachite. And just to see what it looks like. And some people, or quite a few people seem to like that. Then, of course, the question is it right for this watch? Should it have it? Should it have a dial like that? Or is it actually about purity of design and we just have this all gold, nothing else? And no adornment, but you know, I mean, it's doesn't, you know, it only costs me some time, and then you can just look at it and see, oh, this is what it would look like, and then do we like it? Maybe, maybe not. No, and fine, no harm done. But it's interesting to get the feedback, and also sometimes people write to me and then say, oh yeah, I really like that. I wish they made that, and you know, and with Cartier, obviously, for some people, it is possible. Then they can actually sometimes get the watch that they, or something that they like, or something close to that. So there's one example that I'm allowed to talk about publicly because the collector posted it, and then I asked him, you know, can I talk about it? And yeah, okay. So he, it's a cloche, yellow gold, dark blue guilloche dial with Chinese numerals. And that was one of the options. And in that instance, it was there were no changes. So it was made that way. And he now keeps posting photos of it.
Oh, it, wonderful. We'll have to flash that up on screen for our listeners. So I have to send it to me after this. But I'm scrolling through your Instagram.
Yeah, it took it took quite some I mean, you know, the process, obviously, that takes quite a while until, you know, it's done. But I think that's also, it adds to the exclusivity because, you know, expensive furniture is also not something you can just order and it's going to be there the next day. But you will have to wait 2 months or three. So it's quite normal. But that makes it more, I think, more interesting or more exciting because not anyone can get it, first of all. And it's just made for you. So it's special.
No, definitely. Well, I think your work is sold on me. So I think, you know, Cartier need to hire you pretty quick and get you as a illustrated designer so you can bring some of your things to life. So that would be incredible. We've only got a few more questions left of the interview section. But what I wanted to touch on now was some of the sort of illustrations you've done and put on Instagram. So I've got like three or four of my favorites. And it'd be great just if you said a few words on like how they came into being and sort of, you know, why you drew them. So one of them straight up is a Cartier, and it's the Tank Vermeil. And I actually have that watch as well. I managed to source it from Japan, and you've got some great examples. You've got one, I think, you know, with green sort of numerals, and you've got like a red cabochon there with a nice green strap, and you've got a few more colors as well that I was just sort of really, really drawn to, because again, it's a watch that I have in my collection and absolutely love it. Another was, again, I'm going to butcher the French, but the Bang Noir Allongé, and I think you've gone for red numerals there. That's one of my sort of grail watches as well. I think it's absolutely incredible. And then another one is also, we talked about the Abercrombie & Fitch Hoya Seafarer, again, another grail of mine. You know, that they sell for crazy money, but your design of that is fantastic. And I wanted to ask, what made you try your hand on that? And you've got one, I think, very near the beginning of the examples you've put on Instagram. And it's actually sort of deconstructed sub-dials. I think that's a really good example. So I'm sort of quite keen to understand why you did that one. But yeah, those are mine. I don't know, Zach, if you've got any of your favorites as well, scrolling through Bjorn's Instagram.
Yeah,
but again, I think every shot is just brilliant. But over to you, Zach, for a few others.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you had a mention of that 222. So I had a quick look at the Vacheron 222 with the malachite dial and also with the lapis. Here on the timekeepers were definitely stone dial crazy, so those are really exceptional. As well as I've seen that you have also the Cartier Pebble, which I've actually seen. Of course, you mentioned you've worked with Watches of Knightsbridge, and I think they had one at one point. It might have been at Watch Pro. I don't think it was this year. I mean, last year. I think it was the year previous to that. So yeah, you have an exceptional version here depicted. So yeah, these are some of my kind of favorites so far. But there's so many going through your Instagram page. So yeah, real good job.
The Pebble is obviously very rare. I think there were, of the original, there were only 7 or 6. And only one in white gold that Auro Montanari has with a gray dial. So I did do that. And then also then there was a re-edition of 150 pieces. And then I created variations. For example, if it had an inverted dial, what about that? And what about we have some Gilbert Albert dials in there? And then maybe also with that white gold version with a gray Gilbert Albert dial. Very nice and refined. And then I crossed it over with the Dice, with the Cartier Dice watch, which wasn't a wristwatch. So it's just very interesting what happens there with the four dots. It's just, I don't know. I mean, I think you can take it or in black and white or white and black, and it still looks very elegant. Now with the radial dial, that's also one of my favorites. But I thought when I did those, reimagined as a Tank Louis, because you know there are obviously also versions of the Tank Louis that are not classic Roman numeral dials, but totally different with these. I think is it some type of electroplating or electro engraving where they have these. There was a gray dial and a red dial, where you have different fields that sort of change color depending on how you look at it. And so I thought, what if they brought it back as a Tank Louis? So that's why there's also no Tank Master Cartier on there. The Master Cartier took off, and then basically the new case. So that would be platinum. And then with the ruby cabochon, and then also tried different colors. You know, what about green, purple? I think is there, and red. Red on white always works, I think, with Cartier. Just to see, what it does to the design. And I think as long as it stays within the elegant spectrum, it works. I think anything else, it will never be. I think that's when also, when it comes to customization and you have a certain, you have guidelines in place and a certain preset of what people can put together, you always need to control that it doesn't stray off the path that the brand is on. So it has to be in keeping with the design guidelines and be elegant and can't be garish or loud, or colors can't be crazy and only certain combinations can be allowed, really. So like, for example, with the diamond, there are also diamond cabochons. And I've seen that on a Baignoire Allongée, I think it was. Wow. But then that was also gem set. So when the watch is gem set, that's how you can tell aftermarket gem set Cartier watches. If the cabochon is no diamond, then it was done aftermarket. And it's basically...
I didn't realize that.
Doesn't have any value then. There are rules and then there are exceptions and it all depends, but generally it has to stay elegant. That's what I tried not to do anything that might look really off or just too funky. You know, it's easy to do. Obviously it's all vector, it's Illustrator and you can do anything you want. But there's always, I think I also try to sort of say that, okay, this is not, I'm not criticizing anyone here. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Obviously, the designers know what they're doing. This is just really because collectors enjoy seeing these variations. And, I'm not creating something that I'm not creating knockoffs or anything. So this is illustrations. And...
Because I mentioned the one of, I think it's from September 2021, so a long time ago. But like I said, you've got like different sub-dials. You've got ones from Hoya and a few other brands as well. And that's one of my favorites, actually. So it's obviously not a particular watch, but I don't know if you can cast your mind back to it. But I'm looking at it right now and I'll flash it up on screen. But I think that's really funky and playful.
I remember that at the time, Caliber 11 said, they really liked that. And I think they reposted it and then said, this is the Hoya pick and mix. Because it sort of looks like they were sweets there in a jar, maybe. And also, it's quite interesting what happens when you just take the elements apart in a way that you couldn't in real life and just do that, be a bit playful with it. I think I did something similar for this old Breitling Navitimer Cosmonaut, just the hands on their own with the subdial rolling around there. And I think an IWC Mark 13 and, everything falling off the dial, basically. And then later, because I did that, Oleg and Weiss actually wanted that for each watch. They wanted images, extra images. They were basically, we have the watch, and now we also have separate elements. We have the numerals lined up for one watch, or we've got some arrangements with numerals, and then we also got some loose hands and other elements and different arrangements. So for each watch, there is one like that. And then also, because I did the Heuer arrangement, someone who worked on a book that was sort of meant to instruct people participating in a competition for the new railway clock contacted me and then asked me how he would like to have that and some others. And so they were then in that book. And also in an illustration I made for the competition, which was then on the Design Museum's website, which is actually still there, although the competition is long past, but the illustration is still there. So they're actually not subdials, but different clocks, different type of railway clocks that are sort of just lying on top of each other.
Fascinating.
So it's sometimes quite interesting how one thing leads to another unexpectedly.
No, definitely. Yeah, if we are, in terms of time, we are running a bit short, but I did want to mention one thing that you've posted recently, and we do love a good sort of a disco volante dial, and I think it's one you posted even a couple of days ago, and it's your Audemars Piguet, and you've called it a Tutankhamun edition. I just love that sort of style. Any talk about the inspiration you had for it and why you decided to do that now. But I just think that the set you've got up now, like, urging lots of people, if they haven't done it already, to go on your Instagram and just check those out. I just think they're really, really funky.
Yeah, thank you. So I thought the gold and blue, that's something that just stayed with me, because way back there was a Tutankhamun exhibition in Hamburg. And so my parents took me when I was a kid. And I think I still remember the sarcophagus, you know, because obviously it was really well lit, you know, sort of dark, everything dark around, and then just the spotlights on this and the blue and gold. And it's just that combination. There's also, I remember the old watch lady on Instagram posted a Rolex in gold with a blue dial. And it was, you know, amazing. That's, to me, that's the Tutankhamun edition of whatever watch that has that combination. So I thought, you know, what about, because normally there's a champagne sort of colored dial on this. I don't even think there's a black one. Or, you know, silver with the white gold. But then I said, what about the blue dial on the gold watch? And just to, you know, see what it looks like. And yeah, it's just very interesting to see what happens. And also sometimes to learn why they didn't do that. So sometimes when certain combinations just try it out, doesn't cost anything, and put them on there. Or I don't post it because I think, yeah, no, that doesn't really work. Or you can't do that. Then, or it actually doesn't work with the design, or shouldn't be done. So there's always a bit of learning involved, which I think the whole thing I'm doing is sort of was learning about watches before I would actually feel that I'm in any way ready to design something myself. I think it takes a lot of studying, but I've worked with micro brands a little bit on numerals. So that's sort of early steps.
No, very good. Very good. I think, Zach, you've got the last question, and then we're going to do a deep dive into Breguet. So, Zach, take it away with the final one that we've got.
I do indeed. So where do you think the watch art / illustrations is developing in the next few years, and more collaborations potentially?
Yeah, I mean, it's it sort of depends on, I think, what type it is. So if it's fine art, because there are these, obviously... I think she's called Cecilia is my name. I think it's her account. And then she does these oil paintings and photorealistic giant oil paintings or watches that take months to do. And that will obviously always exist. And then some other people who make these incredible pencil drawings that are also photorealistic and sometimes merge with other things. And that's fine art. So that's its own thing. And then we've got some more quirky things that are something you would want to own and put on the wall and have as an object. And then, so I think that always will be there, especially with the advent of AI, which is still very much recognizable. because it's sort of one person's style, because the person who programmed the stuff.
Mm.
So it's actually his work in a way. If you use his software, that's his work. The output is his work. Then you've got Procreate, where you have a photo and you just do that with your finger on top of the photo. And it's a bit like paint by numbers. So usually you see that when there's a certain crazy perspective, and which would be almost impossible to draw freehand, and then it's usually a photo behind it. But none of that would have been useful to what people wanted from me, because they wanted something fairly quickly, and also a version of something that exists, and then to see what that actually looks like as close to reality as possible. And sometimes, obviously, they wanted for the wall. So there were collectors who want something on the wall and then done in my style. And Ollich and Weiss, for example, they said that they wanted it to be as analytical as I do it, because it was all about the detail. And now the thing is, yes, okay, close to reality, you could imagine some sort of generator doing that for you. But then you also need to know about type. And I think that's something that is difficult to replace, luckily, because it requires a lot of background knowledge. So the photos might not be very good. And so I see, when I really zoom in, I see pixels, and there are no better photos. But then looking at the overall image, I can then tell, okay, this is probably that kind of typeface. And I know then what to look for and what to go for and what to draw. And I think that sort of knowledge that will be required for to make these things possible. And it's not just I think it can't be replaced that easily with something that generates images.
Mm.
But I think in terms of collaborations, yes, definitely. So, I mean, as we speak, there have been some with microbrands, or someone just wanted numerals to be drawn or to be based on something. And then obviously you need to know about type, and not just about the use of type, but also the creation of type. And I've done that in the past in my, graphic design work. And that's something you just need to know. Otherwise, the result won't work. It's just fascinating how things have happened without me trying to approaching people. You know, people have come to me, which is obviously quite amazing. I wouldn't have never dreamt of this. And in some instances, I'm still not sure if it really happened. And so Yeah, it's one of the things I can't talk about, sadly, but it's sort of like, where you really have to think, did that really happen? You know?
That's incredible.
Well,
I'm sure you've got your very own coffee table book of your stuff that, you know, that's precious to you, that only you and the person that asked for it can see it. But that does sound incredible.
Yeah, it's just, I think, obviously hoping that there will be more in the future, and then from other brands, or from eventually also more dial design, more involved than numerals, but more than that. And but then obviously watches are three-dimensional objects, so you have to always look at it not just from a two-dimensional perspective of this is a flat surface, but it's actually what happens if I turn it, how does it look from the sides and from the back, and how does it work on the wrist? There are so many things that I've heard people, obviously, working on watches or having designed watches, what that involves, and it's years usually of testing and development.
No, Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for that. Like I said, it's been so fascinating to talk to you and sort of you giving you the time to answer those questions. So we're going to pivot now to do our sort of watch deep dive to sort of finish us off. And like before we start, I said we're going to talk about Breguet, but I've got to make a sort of confession slash statement. I mean, my favorite sort of style of hands is actually Breguet. I love the shape. I love the design concept. You know, I've got this 1930s sort of vintage Omega, you know, with that style. You know, I think it's incredible. I'm going to be a little bit biased for the next few minutes about how much I do love that Breguet style hands. But we'll talk about a few watches. So, you know, we'll talk about the Classique, and then we'll pivot to the you know, the Type 20. So again, there are lots of different variants, but we'll just pick a few. You know, the Classique, I think it's the 5177. It's got the blue dial. It does have a date window that I could just about look past. I'm not too sure, but you know, the rest of the dial, it just is beautiful, particularly in that blue. And then you've got obviously the 7147. It's got an offset second dial, and again, listeners will know I have an absolute love of symmetry. So when that's broken, I do get a little bit grumpy. But I think I can again let that one pass, because I think for this design, I think it's incredible, especially how it's sort of slightly depressed into the dial. I think it's a really, really neat touch. And I've managed to handle one in the flesh as well, and I've been mm-hmm. pretty impressed with them. And then the final one for me is the 7637. And it's the repetition. It's got a gold case, and it just matches so well with sort of the jet black dial. And how that sort of complication is put together is so subtle, but also so striking. So, I mean, Zach, I don't know what you think about the Classique and Bjorn before we touch on the Type 20.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the 5177, it has quite a familiar shaped case, watch case, it being round. And I like the famous Breguet hands, as you mentioned, and numerals. I'm also a fan of the third blue hand with that particular model. Mm. With the 7147, I like the spider lugs. Wasn't a fan originally, but I've come to kind of grow kind of fond towards them. The imprinted style sub dial is very cool for me. I haven't really seen anything like that with any other models, but you know, I could be wrong. There could be some more that's quite similar.
It's great in the flesh. You should check it out. It's really, really good in the flesh.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to visit and definitely check it out. And also, I feel like it's a great dress watch. It looks super classy with that black on that black strap as well. Also, the 7637. I feel like the design is pretty similar to the two previous models mentioned. But as I had a look scrolling before you sat down and had this conversation, I looked at the gold variant, and I believe it had a skeleton dial version, which was quite cool to see. Also quite nice to see to see Breguet showcasing an impressive looking movement. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm not sure if Bjorn, you have a take on these models.
Yeah, the sunken sub dial, I mean, that's the small seconds, that's really nice. I think that's, let me just check the photo again. That was really very subtle. And the hands, you know, the numerals, perfect. Yeah, that one. In white gold. Is it white gold or platinum?
I'm not 100% sure.
But either way, it would be, it's perfection. Yeah, the only other watch with the sunken dial or small seconds would be the Bonneron Mirage with the stone dials, which is also incredible. I mean, that's incredibly difficult to manufacture because, you know, stone and that can just break. But Breguet, I looked up a Classique that I like, and I think it's similar to the one with the blue dial, but no date window. And it's the 5367.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Which is the Classique Tourbillon Extra Plat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah. I mean, you know, you have the simplicity of the design, and then you've got the tourbillon, and that's where the detail happens. And that contrast, I think that's just really, really nice. With this, you know, dark blue dial, Breguet hands, and then, I mean, I'm never sure if I like blued Breguet hands on a white dial more than, obviously, they're silver or platinum on blue. But yeah, the only timepiece with Breguet hands that I have is sort of mantle clock, which I got for £40 somewhere. No, it's actually in Crystal Palace. So, but the funny thing is that I live in Greenwich or, you know, somewhere in that area. And I found that that clock was actually an office next to the Brunel dock on the other side of the Thames. And that because there was a paper label inside. And so I managed to track it down. But actually the hands are the typical Breguet hands. And then it has an enamel dial and Roman numerals. But also from a typographic point of view, it's just so interesting to see. For example, we had a kitchen clock at home with an enamel dial. And the numerals are exactly the same. Really, almost exactly the same as on a Patek Philippe from the same time period, the 20s. They just, you know, the watchmakers or clock designers, they were obviously all immersed into the subject and they just would use what was modern at the time and whether that was a clock or a wristwatch.
Fascinating.
I just discovered that recently. I thought, but these are exactly the same numerals. Yeah. Incredible.
The London Tube is really fascinating. So the station that I get on the Met Line to go into London, the clocks that they have, I love also like Pontief hands as well, and a lot of on the station they have that for their sort of train clocks to tell the time, which I think is great. And you can, if you spend time wandering around different tube stations, you can see different designs like that. So I was going to ask you, while we've got you, do you have a particular sort of watch hand that you like as an illustrator that you like drawing, or just personally that you like?
Well, on the tube subject, you know, I think it's Bethnal Green. There's a really nice tube clock that has, instead of numerals, it has the tube roundel.
Okay.
And I think the hands also have the roundel on them. It's a really nice, I mean, there's one in the typical red and blue with a white dial and the red and blue, but there's also one with gold. So gold case and gold roundels, it's just amazing, incredible. They should make that as a wristwatch. I would buy that.
No, definitely.
But hands, well, I mean, on Cartier, obviously, you find Breguet hands and you find sword hands. And it's sometimes it be that, for example, the Tank Must Large, when you look at there's this book about a Cartier tank and then the vintage model, the vintage Tank Louis would have had Breguet hands, but they don't do that now. So now it's sword hands, which in a way modernizes it a bit. But it would be nice if there was an option, you know, where you could choose, I want the Breguet hands. I mean, I think they call it also Apple hands, don't they? Because they don't want to say Breguet. Yeah. Yeah, there's so many interesting types of hands. Leaf hands can be nice, I think. You know, Dauphine. Depends on, I mean, that's when obviously the watch design comes in, I mean, to play, when you think, okay, does this style of hand actually work with this style of dial and style of case? And that's when you have to know what you're doing. I mean, when you put stuff together, and does it still work or does it look weird? For example, hands are too short. I sometimes see that. That's really strange. Or when the seconds hand is too short or something, or it's not blued. The hands are not blued, but they are just anodized blue. It looks very different. You can tell immediately that's not heat blued steel.
Yeah. So I think I like blue steeled hands. Yeah. Vintage.
It's quite the process. And also what I found really exciting was that Cartier, they heat blue the hands, and they've got lots of them, and then they color match them. So they would then select the hour and minute hand that have the same shade of blue for each watch.
That's painstaking, but I'm sure someone like Cartier would do it.
But that's what you pay for as well. Then.
Yeah.
I think that's...
And Jaeger as well, I'm sure, as well.
Oh, yeah. They've got actually... so I've seen a Reverso, and it was much darker. The blue was much darker than on Cartier. I don't know if it was just that particular watch or if they generally do it to a darker tone.
Yeah, because I like the micro brand Anil Dane, because they do like a purpley one. So also they heat it to a different temperature, and the way that comes out is more purple. I really do like as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I think that's the attention to detail. I mean, one thing that maybe I can briefly mention, because Breguet, we looked at Breguet, and obviously they're really nice numerals. So nice typography on watches. So these days, micro brands tend to pay a lot of attention to typography on the dial and have custom fonts made and so on. But some of the bigger ones don't, and or they used to, but they don't anymore. And I still haven't found out why exactly. But it's just something that keeps fascinating me, because I think, you know, when you all the detail and all the attention to detail and all the, you know, sometimes really obviously expensive, the more expensive, the more time that was spent on making the watch and polishing the movement and so on. And then the typeface might sometimes, or quite often actually, be Times New Roman. And then I'm wondering, you know, why, because it's, it can be off the shelf, but it could be something else. So for example, in the group of Times New Roman, the transitionals, you could choose Baskerville. Might as well go with Baskerville then. It doesn't have to be time. I mean, it's Microsoft Word basically. And
I think it's because watch brands, so the more established ones, I find obviously they've got a massive heritage. I'm definitely not knocking that, but I think they're too conservative at the moment, you know, and whereas you've also got the micro brands and they want to be more daring, whether that's with dial colors, but like you said, even with, you know, sort of fonts, I think they're doing really, really well. And it's a shame that those bigger brands don't tap into that. And sort of, like I said, be more creative in what they design.
Yeah. I think they, you know, it could be customized or custom made or adopted from older designs that they used to use,
yeah,
or
back,
when it was still hand drawn. But I mean, there are lots of good options to choose from, even if it's off the shelf and not customized. But I remember that, for example, with car brands, car makers, they, I think, sort of early 90s, they started having their own fonts. And now it's sort of a normal thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. I think it's maybe there's something that's still developing and that we might then see happening. But there's, I mean, it's, you know, Gilles Lecoultre, for example, they commissioned this illustrator to, he's a famous typographer, to do an Art Deco typeface. If you want to have the back engraved with your initials, you can choose from that font.
Oh, wonderful.
So that was a good idea.
I love that. I'd love my, I've obviously just recently got a Reverso in sort of rose gold from the 1990s, and we'll flash it up on screen. And I'd love the case back to be sort of, you know, enameled or something with a, sort of one of my favorite sort of pieces of artwork. But obviously you can look at the typefaces as well, which, you know, which
but if it's early 90s, then that will still be the handmade font that they used.
Yes. Yeah.
And so the case back is blank at the moment.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
so, yeah, I'd love to have something designed. I'll send it to you after this so you can have a look at it. But do really love
very
that.
Very nice. I mean, it's totally timeless. Reverso is just amazing.
Brilliant. Cool. And I think I'm just going to talk about the Type 20, and then Zach, you'll take us away for the outro. I mean, I love this watch in terms of vintage. I think it's one of the ultimate pilot watches, again, but when it's vintage, you get that sort of, you know, orangey sort of radium color, you know, on the numerals and on the hands. I mean, the hands themselves can vary. You know, we just touched on, you know, different types of hands that we like, you know, that there's, I like the sword hand variation, but my favorite is very much the syringe style that they have on some of the more vintage ones. But they have done something silly on the latest versions. You know, on the date window, you know, they've got it between the, you know, the four and the five position. I think it looks ugly and unnecessary. It's a real shame. But they have actually released a sort of more modern sort of green loomed version, which I think is nice. And it's got this really, what I think, quite beautiful coin edged sort of bezel design. And they've got a hefty sort of onion for the crown. So I do like a good crown that looks like the IWC sort of onion as well. Zach, then we think about, you know, the Type 20, and perhaps Bjorn, your sort of closing remarks on that watch model as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think it looks really good. Unlike you, I don't really mind having the date window there, but I know that you're kind of the king of symmetry. So it bothers you, but yeah, I think it looks really great. I love like the big onion crown and the pushers, you know, that typical vintage pilot look, and like the coined edge too. So and the Brigade kind of like branding under the 12 as well. So big fan of this watch. How about you, Bjorn?
Yeah, I mean, Zenith also tends to have the date window there. I think it's, I don't know, I mind it more, I think, when it's like with one reference directly next to the three.
Mm.
So where you have the three and then obviously you have other numerals in the date window, and then it's like, well, so if you need to make a decision, then if you have the date window there or the three, but not both. It obviously means also the watch is bigger than the movement. So I actually like the movement to fill the watch case. So if the movement isn't bigger, then, you know, if it has a certain size, then the watch should have that size and there shouldn't be a spacer inside. But yeah, I mean, syringe hands, yes, that I forgot about those. I mean, it's the loom color. I think as long as it's natural, then I'm fine with Fortina. I think if it's, you know, too much of a roasted tone, then I don't know. Because I have seen an old Speedmaster that actually has aged tritium on it, and it's not that strong of a brown.
Mm.
It's actually more like a faint brown green hue. Just not a very strong color. Subtle. I think subtle does it.
Mm. Oh, brilliant. Like I said, I think if I was to get a Breguet, I think that for an everyday watch, the Type 20, I think, is pretty good. But the Classique for me, is just brilliant. Mm. Dress, particularly the one with the sort of, like I said, the sub dial that's slightly sort of indented. It does look brilliant, but look, there's so many different variations that are all very, very expensive, but I just wanted to sort of pick those two out for our listeners. But Zach, do you want to do the outro? And obviously thank Bjorn for sort of his time in particular, and I found it a really fascinating time with him.
Of course. First of all, thank you, Bjorn, for joining us. It's been really interesting to have you on the show, and
thank you.
A lot of anticipation around it, so it's lovely to hear you, to have you on. And so that's a wrap for this month. So thank you, Bjorn, for joining us, and all of you for listening to us. No problem. If you want to follow Bjorn, it's Bjorn at Altman with two N's, but it will be put in the description also if you're wondering about the spelling. If you enjoyed the episode, drop us a review, follow us on Instagram at thetimekeepers2024, and let us know what you're lusting over this month also.